It's time for the Biblical Prophecy Program with your host, Dr. Alan Kirshner of Eschatos Ministries.
Hey, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Biblical Prophecy Program. So today I am going to continue my series on Revelation chapter 19, verse 11 through chapter 20, verse 6, and the millennium, that series. And the series is, I'm going through my book, A Linguistic Approach to Revelation chapter 19, verse 11 through 20, chapter 20, verse 6, and the millennium binding of Satan. This is the only Greek exegetical book on the millennial passage in the book of Revelation, but in print. And this is the first and only volume or work that you can find out there. Typically, treatments of Revelation 20 are, you know, there's other types of methodologies, literary, theological, and so forth that apply different methodologies to the millennial text. But this is an actual Greek exegesis, of course, from a discourse analytical perspective, which in my view is the best way to analyze a text. And if you want to learn more about the methodology, I have an entire, the second chapter explains the interpretive way to interpret scripture in looking at questions of, for example, cohesion. And so, now again, and there are other treatments on Revelation 20, don't get me wrong, out there. But as far as a rigorous interpretive way in looking at the Greek, this is the only one out there. But I apologize, it's a very expensive volume, but if you're interested, very interested in this debate, it's worth the money because this is all about original research. And today I am going to be concluding my introduction to this, to the book, basically kind of summarizing what the book is about, going through the different chapters of it. And then we're going to be getting into the actual arguments. And I might kind of bounce around, actually. I may not just, you know, go through it in a linear fashion. If you want to get the book, you can do that yourself. But I may just bounce around with different arguments that I made in the book. And some of the really technical stuff in the Greek, I may just leave out because I know some of you might get, you know, glassy-eyed. All right, so, and before I begin, I want to note that we have a fundraising campaign going on. I'm looking to raise 25 new ministry partners for the year 2025. We're almost halfway there. We have nine new partners, and it's giving on a monthly basis. That's what the ministry partnership is, and you can go to alankirshner.com and click on the ministry partner and become a ministry partner. Of course, we would appreciate any, you know, one-time donations as well, but the partnerships help us to gauge, you know, obviously a budget and so forth. And we know for consistent contributions on a monthly basis, that helps quite a bit. So I'll leave a link in the show notes. Okay, let's see here. Oh, I do want to mention also, we do have someone who is matching, at least for the first year, any new Eschatos partners. Okay, the last time I talked about, the episode was about giving you the historical, probably too much information that you really needed, but it was the historical origin of how the modern chapter break system came about. And I mentioned too that, you know, scholars are not exempt from being influenced by, you know, artificial breaks like versification and chapter breaks and even headings and so forth. And I'm afraid, you know, I'm not saying it's the, and I mentioned this in the last program, that I'm not claiming that artificial chapter breaks is the primary determining factor for example, a millennialist to jump right into Revelation chapter 20, verse 1. But it's there. There is this idea. We kind of gravitate to the beginning of chapters, right? And maybe it's the easy way out. You know, it's just, hey, let's talk about the millennium in the book of Revelation. All right, everyone turn to Revelation 20. No, that's very surface level. The context, the linguistic environment for how we understand the message in the beginning of Revelation 20, it begins back in Revelation chapter 19. And there, anyway, so let me summarize the volume here. I'm trying to stay warm. It's a balmy, what was it, like almost negative, the windshield was, I think it was negative 25 last night here up in northern Wisconsin. Even though I do have a wood fireplace, which is really nice, wood fire, and that radiating heat is just amazing in a cast iron wood stove. It can get chilled once, you know, you have to keep on remembering to put wood in every few hours or so. Okay, so, and in fact, tomorrow is going to be even colder. I think it's going to hit negative 30, the wind chill at least, and maybe negative 20, the regular temperature. So, okay, so having drawn attention to the history of chapter break divisions, I'm going to make a few more comments on the purpose for this study. Non-sequential interpreters, now I use that term, it's aka amillennialist. These are the ones who will, they claim that the binding of Satan, you know, that event is realized in the first coming of Christ, not the second coming of Christ. So they would actually, that's why it's non-sequential, right? The, you know, premillennialists, myself, would argue that the cause of Satan's binding is what the text naturally reads, but you got to go back in Revelation 19. It's the battle in Revelation 19, which I would understand as the Battle of Armageddon that was previewed there back in chapter 16. The battle is Jesus' eschatological victory that brings about the defeat of the beast and the false prophet, and unfortunately, there's a chapter break there, and Satan's binding. So that's why we would say it's all millennials are non-sequential, and pre is sequential. So non-sequential interpreters, they rightly link Christ's victory at the eschatological battle in chapter 19 as the occasion for the punishment of two adversaries of Christ. Who are they? The beast and the false prophet, what I mentioned. So yeah, they get that right? Revelation chapter 19, verse 20. But for whatever reason, they somehow the chapter breaks prevents them from going on to the binding of Satan. So it's the same occasion. What is the occasion again? It's the Christ victory in chapter 19. The same occasion is, they don't consider it for the third adversary of God, Satan and his punishment of binding in the abyss. This study, that is my book I'm going through, proposes that it is cohesively inconsistent to disconnect Satan's punishment in chapter 20, verse 1 through 3, from the punishment of the other two adversaries of God, and thus from the consequence of the eschatological battle in chapter 19. The same is true of disconnecting the millennium vindication of the saints, chapter 20, verses 4 through 6, from the victory of Christ at the eschatological battle. And I note here, I will argue that textual meanings in the target text, they signal that the binding of Satan and the establishment of the millennium are cohesively linked or tied to the events back in chapter 19, verses 11 through 21. The eschatological battle in chapter 19, verse 11 through 21 is the setting for Satan's millennium binding and the establishment of the millennium reign of the saints. I note here in a footnote, I said, it's virtually agreed among interpreters that these two inextricable events, the millennium binding of Satan and the millennium reign of the saints, are coterminous, since the binding establishes the millennium period. Quote, and I cite verse 20, verse 2, he seized the dragon, that ancient serpent who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. The proposal of this study then describes how this twofold event is cohesively linked to the eschatological battle in chapter 19. Okay, so here's the Greek linguistic perspective I take. And some of these terms are going to be unpacked more in the book. So this proposal then will focus on analyzing Revelation chapter 19, verse 11 through 21, and chapter 20, verse 1 through 6, from the framework of, it's called Systemic Functional Linguistics, SFL. So when you do a dissertation, a PhD dissertation, you know, you just don't randomly approach it. You have to have some coherent sort of theoretical methodology and what's called systemic. A lot of you may have heard of Chomsky with his formal linguistics, Chomsky, very popular, right? Well, there's another school that basically countered Chomsky. And of course, you find its beginnings even before Chomsky. But it's one of the main schools was Michael Halliday's Systemic Functional Linguistics. And a note here, the study will employ this robust Greek linguistic methodology demonstrating the cohesive nature between chapter 19, 11 through 21, and chapter 20, verse 1 through 6, by analyzing these textual meanings using, there's two tools, okay? There's two interpretive tools that I use in the book to argue for a premillennial reading of Revelation chapter 19, verse 20. And it's called cohesive harmony. So cohesive harmony, they examine, it's becoming more popular actually in just recent years. It examines the links, cohesive links and chains and what's called chain interactions. And then what's called, the other tool is information flow. And information flow is a way in which you analyze the theme and prominence of like highlighting of a discourse. In the different, you know, levels of a passage, like the clause, the sentence, the paragraph, this, you know, a sentence and the section and the discourse itself. And again, I'll unpack the methodology in maybe a few separate episodes here. And I think it's good bit that, you know, yeah, it's good to talk. This is the Bible Prophecy Program, but I think it's good to teach a sound biblical interpretive approach to scripture. Like, how do we interpret scripture in a very proven methodologically way? And that's what I'll be bringing into this program in the near future. So this is the first Greek linguistic study on the millennial text with special attention to the question of cohesion. The last book of the New Testament has been analyzed by a host of approaches, but only recently have modern Greek linguistic methodologies been considered. And if you have the book, I have a pretty lengthy footnote giving a lot of bibliography for that claim. Okay, in addition, scholars are modeling Systemic Functional Linguistics, the framework, as an interpretive tool for New Testament books. And again, I give a lot of bibliography for those if you want to research that further. I will contend that Revelation chapter 19, verses 11 through 21, and chapter 20, verse 1 through 6 are cohesively linked together, realized through their textual meanings within the theoretical framework of systemic functional linguistics. Of course, it's reconfigured for Greek, for Koine Greek. If it can be established that these two units, passages, are not disconnected, but cohesively linked, then interpreters will have to consider its implications for the millennial question. The main implication construing the eschatological battle in chapter 19 as the occasion for Satan's millennium binding and the vindication for the saints. Linguistic analysis seeks to know how language works. In this case, it is concerned with how Koine Greek was understood in the original setting of Revelation. To be sure, linguistic analysis is not completely disconnected from other methodologies. For instance, linguistic approaches inform literary analysis by asking how the story is told. The question of the relationship between the binding of Satan and the eschatological battle shapes the storyline. David L. Barr explains, a prominent feature in literary studies is, quote, at the heart of the notion of plot is the idea of a cause and effect connection between events in a sequence, so that event B happens not only after event A, but in some sense because of event A. This notion is related to what the study is concerned with, except I am not using traditional literary tools, but rather employing a linguistic theoretical framework. So a methodology of linguistics does not operate in a vacuum where there are no implications informing other types of readings or methodologies, approaches for the apocalypse. Nor is this linguistic study concerned with smaller units of language such as phonology or lexical semantics, as valuable as those studies are. This analysis is focused on the larger levels or ranks of clause, sentence, paragraph, section, and discourse, which coincides with several concerns of literary and narrative features. It is not that one methodological approach is right and all the others are wrong. Rather, the linguistic approach fills a methodological vacuum that can have some say, perhaps a lot to say, into the meaning of John's message. Okay, so just briefly here then, I'm going to go through, we'll just take a couple minutes, we'll be finished here. Each chapter, I'll summarize each chapter of the volume. And there's, you know, depending on the chapter, there's like some chapters will have more arguments than others. But here it is. Okay, in chapter one, I will survey traditional interpretations on the millennial question, which includes the sequential and non-sequential frameworks, as well as non-traditional proposals that do not use a temporal framework. Then I will conclude with outlining recent critical methodological approaches to the Book of Revelation. In chapter two, I provide the following description of the linguistic methodology that I will be using in this study. And this is something you guys, if you do get the volume, you don't want to skip over this because it really explains. And these are two powerful interpretive tools that you can use for interpreting scripture on your own. So again, you may not be using all the technical jargon and so forth, but you can really, I think, gather maybe some principles here that you can apply. So again, here in chapter two, I provide the following description of the linguistic methodology that I will be using in this study. Number one, the foundational linguistic principles of modern linguistics. Number two, how modern linguistics have contributed in general to advances in the study of Koine Greek. Number three, the development of the field of discourse analysis. Number four, principles of the theoretical framework of systemic functional linguistics. And then number five, the specific methodology on cohesion that I use. It's realized through two types of textual meanings or tools here, cohesive harmony analysis and information flow analysis. Now, in chapter three, I will identify and organize the componential ties, that is the links, and cohesive chains from chapter 19, verse 11 through 20, verse 6. In other words, these two passages are not disconnected from each other. Then I will comment on key chains that are linked between chapter 19, verse 11 through 21, and chapter 20, verse 1 through 6. The chains that are most significant by creating threads of continuity. That's key there, threads of continuity. In chapter 4, I conclude my cohesive harmony analysis by identifying and displaying chain interactions, followed by my observations. And then in addition, I will calculate the cohesive harmony index and other related ratios that give us a quantitative measurement, which collectively indicates the degree of coherence in the text. So there is a level of objectiveness to the data, and that's to the data of the evidence. And some say, oh, it's all interpretive. Well, no, there are some objective evidence, data in the text, especially, of course, semantic data that powerfully imply a premillennial reading. And that's what I will be getting into. In chapter 5 now, I will use the tool of information flow, which provides the additional dimension to cohesion that is concerned with discourse thematization and prominence. So it's establishing a theme and showing how where is there prominence in this passage. The chapter will focus on the immediate context, or what's called cotext, of chapter 19, verse 11 through 20, verse 6, analyzing the ranks of clause, sentence, paragraph, and section. In chapter 6, I continue to use the tool of information flow, broadening my analysis to cover the cotext of the discourse of Revelation as it relates cohesive links to chapter 19, verse 11, all the way through chapter 20, verse 6. This is what all millennialism does not show. So it's definitely a counter argument to all millennialism here, is showing the semantic continuity. And then there's two appendices here. Appendix 1 covers 5 interpretive shifts of the millennium and that have occurred over the centuries. So I'll have to, those would be separate episodes, of course. And then there's one on the question and implication of the identity of those seated on thrones, Akathisan, in chapter 20, verse 4. Michael Spiegel from Dallas Theological Seminary, we co-authored a paper that we delivered at ETS a number of years ago. I know he published a version of it, a form of our paper in his volume, The Fathers on the Future, a new book by Henderson Publishers by Michael Spiegel, A Second Century Eschatology for the 21st Century Church. He has there's also a supplement to it as well, supplement Excursus and Index for the Fathers on the Future. I highly recommend getting these two volumes. Of course, he's pre-tribulational, and there's a few points I would disagree with him on some of his chapters, but I would just point you to all of his other chapters for sure in that volume. Like I said, it's a treasure trove. Okay, in summary, this study proposes that chapter 19, verse 11 through 21, and chapter 20, verses 1 through 6 are cohesively linked with each other. While cohesion and coherence do not in itself demonstrate sequence, the analysis demonstrates that there is no cohesive break at chapter 20, verse 1, as all millennialists claim. Instead, the analysis indicates a continuous semantic environment between chapter 19, verse 11 through 21, and chapter 20, verse 1 through 6. If this is correct, then it strongly implies that the millennium binding of Satan and the vindication of the saints are consequent effects from the battle in chapter 19. Scholars who disconnect chapter 20, verse 1 through 6 from chapter 19, 11 through 21, all millennialists, construe the millennium binding of Satan and the vindication of the saints as a recapitulation of the inter-advent period. Consequently, that interpretation breaks John's cohesive message by creating a new semantic environment at chapter 20, verse 1. Rather than disrupting the cohesion between chapter 19, verses 11 through 21, and chapter 20, verse 1 through 6, John chooses linguistic resources to signal a semantic thread of continuity. Okay, I hope that's been helpful. Like I said, the last few, episodes on this series, the specific series, and I'll leave a link in the show notes. You can click on the link to the series, has really covered the introduction. And over time, I'm going to take a break here and there and cover other, do other episodes on other topics of Bible prophecy. But over time, that's just an ongoing series here that will be going through the arguments in my book. So anyway, I hope that's been helpful, and thanks for listening.